people living with dementia do the things they do for the same reason that we do the things we do.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Welcome to episode 64 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. If the person you're caring for has a form of dementia, then it's likely they do things they may not have done in the past. Or maybe because they have dementia, you think they shouldn't be doing something. But understanding why they are doing things is extremely important to providing the best care possible, resulting in the best positive experience possible for everyone. Christy, I'm confident that a lot of our care partners see their loved ones doing different things throughout the day that maybe they wouldn't have done in the past, and they may be wondering why their loved one is doing these things. So in this episode, I believe you're going to help us look at some of these different means of communications, all of air quotes here, behaviors, and help our care partners understand why they're doing those things.
Absolutely. So I think that that is an important reminder there too. Anytime that either of us use the word behaviors, it is always with air quotes because in these parts, we know that so-called behaviors are actually just another way of communicating with us. So it's nonverbal communication. It's often communication you don't enjoy. Sometimes I call it extreme charades, but the bottom line is our person is trying to communicate to us, to convey to us that something is happening for them. They need something from us, or they have some type of unmet need, and they're trying to get us with the program. So we need to figure out what it is that they're trying to convey to us so that we can jump in and offer an assist.
And I think it's key there for our listeners maybe who are new to the program to understand that one reason we do not want to use the word behaviors is that when we use labels, it often puts a negative connotation on it, and it kind of closes our mind to actually looking at what those unmet needs are and how to help our loved one through those times of need. So I think it's really important. The first step is to actually realize that and help them through that.
Well, that is an awesome point, Mike, right there, because I forget about it. Sometimes I get a little too myopic in dementia world. And lest any of our listeners think that we're throwing out PC left coast nonsense, here's how it affects you in a very practical way. When, let's say that your person is in the hospital, or that you have chosen to move your person into memory care, the staff is trained to look for the word behaviors, and that can throw up a red flag, which can end up meaning that your person is put on unnecessary medications that can be dangerous to them. It can mean that your person is denied admission to a community that you would like them to move into. So that label brings with it concrete negative consequences. So that's why we're so passionate about making sure that all our listeners know what's actually going on behind so-called behaviors, so that you can figure it out. And you, unfortunately, as care partner, are going to be in the position of educating other professionals. I know it's totally unfair. Professionals should know this stuff, but I am telling you the reality. You're going to be in that education position, and this is going to help you really advocate for your loved one.
And as you've taught us on a couple episodes ago, our care partners have that superpower. They know their loved one better than anyone else, and they're able to understand and go and help in their moment of need in their reality. So taking that in and working with the professionals is that ideal situation to help this your loved one.
Absolutely.
So Christy, what would be the first thing that a loved one would be doing that we want to help our care partners understand, or maybe you want to talk about it kind of more in general?
Well, I think kind of one thing to always keep in mind, because this is a question that I have heard a lot over the years, is why do they do that? And you know, you fill in the blank about whatever the that is, right?
Right.
But something that's really important to keep in mind, actually, there are a few things that are really important to keep in mind, just kind of as a general baseline for this topic. Number one is people living with dementia do the things they do for the same reason that we do the things we do. And that is because our brain is telling us, that's a good idea. Do that thing, whatever it is in the moment. The big difference is for us who are not cognitively impaired, we don't think about it, right? I don't really need to think about, is it a good idea to take a shower today and be clean or not?
Right.
It's just my brain is telling me, like, okay, I'm awake. It's time to get in the shower. I'm going to wear clothes today. You know, all of those things that, again, we don't really think about, but it's because our brain is driving us and telling us what we need to do, what's a good idea. And we don't really question it. And this is why it can be hard to break bad habits, incidentally. But I digress. So for a person living with dementia, the same thing is happening. Their brain is telling them whatever they're doing is what they should be doing. Big difference there, right, is they have dementia. So that means their whole brain is under attack. So that's the second reason why these things happen. And then a third reason is often people living with dementia have another condition called anosognosia, which I probably mentioned on the show before. And simply what that means is that their brain is telling them that they don't have any type of impairment or disability or inability to do something in the way that they used to do it. So when your brain is telling you, hey, everything's hunky-dory, it's all A-okay, then you're inclined to do whatever your brain's telling you, right? So those are the main reasons why people living with dementia do the things they do. And then when it comes to these so-called behaviors, right, there are specific things like, you know, why would somebody be biting or hitting or kicking or taking their clothes off in public or masturbating in the living room or all kinds of different things. So, and those can have very specific reasons why they're happening beyond kind of the broad generalizations that I just gave.
Well, Christy, so let's talk about some strategies on how to, you know, unlock or unravel the mystery with this so that our care partners can help find out what the unmet need is so that they can have this positive time with their loved one.
Okay, that sounds good. So I have a program called Memory Care at Home where I teach care partners the techniques and the strategies that professionals are trained to use. And as I was recording that program during module 3 on so-called behaviors, I thought to myself, hey, I know what would be really handy if I made like a bonus guide that's just called The Language of Behaviors and really explains why people do these things. And so I came up with 36 things that are fairly common and just broke it down. So I'm going to share from that if that's okay.
Yeah, let's pick a couple of those and
okay.
Step through those. I think that'll be extremely beneficial.
Okay, so it can be, you know, it can be a lot of different things, and sometimes it's just one thing. So for example, let's say that you're trying to help your wife, okay, and you're trying to help her change her shirt, And she starts calling you a filthy son of a biscuit eater and saying, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And then she starts swinging at you and, you know, and connects and hits you. So what could be going on there, right? Why would she be doing that? So it could be because you're hurting her. And I know you wouldn't be doing that intentionally, but like in my case, for example, I have an old shoulder injury. So I have a permanent limitation on my range of motion. So if someone was trying to pull a shirt over my head, chances are they're going to do it wrong if they don't know that information or if they have forgotten that information. Right? So that could be the message, or it could be that maybe she doesn't understand, like she wasn't expecting a move toward the shirt. And so why are you doing that? What's going on? I don't understand. So these nonverbal messages are often shortcuts to get our attention very quickly. Like, you need to stop immediately.
I'm picturing the husband wanting to help his wife get dressed or change her shirt. And he's kind of feeling he's got his agenda. He wants to get stuff done, as we've kind of talked about before. And he goes at her kind of quickly, fast movements. He's using that reason and logic, and he's just going to get it done. But he's not giving her brain time to process, and he's not talking through it with her to help her to relax and not be defensive.
Right. And I have to say, honestly, and please, if there's going to be any hate mail out of this, send it to Mike, not me. But honestly, in my experience, this is a true story. Typically, women care partners are going to get more blowback than male care partners. And the reason why is because women tend to be socialized to take care of others.
Right.
And also to take care of home tasks. And God love all the millennials out there that are changing this. I applaud you wholeheartedly, but there's still a lot of gender identity attached to certain tasks. And so for female care partners, they do tend to be more task oriented. And so, and I'm not saying that women are not loving, of course they are, you know, and like I said, are socialized to do it. But they can be thinking of all the other things that need to be done, which is, you know, maybe laundry and grocery shopping and preparing meals and, you know, changing the linens after getting your person's clothes changed and all of these things that need to happen. That can just be like this massive list in their head. And so they actually are more likely to forget to build that rapport first. You know, acknowledging like, hey, good morning, and, you know, happy to see you, something like that. Whereas with male care partners, what I have observed hundreds of times is, and I wish I could like just, you know, bottle this quality because it's so awesome. They're so creative, and it comes from this place of not having been socialized to be in that position. So in my experience, men tend to come in with the mindset of, huh, well, I'm going to figure this out somehow. And they're just pretty good natured about it because they come in with the mindset of they're going to need to enlist the help of the person. And so they might be joking through it or coaxing through it or whatever, but they tend to, and men get this bad rap for, you know, not using very many words. They tend to be verbal through the whole experience and encouraging and ready to give a high five at the end of it and making it a really positive experience. So again, I know I was using broad sweeping generalizations. It's only based on my experience over so many years, but this, I have seen enough commonality to actually comment on it now. And so if we can all bring in that, you know, build the rapport first and then stay verbal throughout the experience and offer that encouragement. And heck yeah, do a fist bump, do a high five, do a hug, whatever it is. When you get to the end of the thing, because you know what? We say care partner rather than caregiver, because you guys are partners in this. You two are partners in this experience. So, you know, it's okay to high five a teammate, right?
Exactly. And I think the point there is that we all just need to understand who we are and what background we're coming in with. And when things aren't working right, necessarily adjust our approach and learn from those who have had success doing it. And as Christy's mentioned, she's done this with hundreds of families. So she's seen what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, in this instance, maybe the men do it a little better, but in other instances, the women do it better. And we just all want to learn from ourselves because we're all in this together. And I was actually supposed to say we're all...
You might even say we're together in this.
I was supposed to say we're together in this. And that's great. So we know it could be pain causing the issue. It could be that we're rushing the situation. Our approach and our demeanor, of course, and the energy we're bringing could be affecting the situation.
Yeah, lots of different things could be happening, but we can kind of narrow it down when we look at what that nonverbal message is. And sometimes it can be verbal too. So for example, one of the things that families just, I think, want to rip their hair out over is arguing. And this is certainly something I get asked about a lot. And so, you know, people will say, oh my God, Christy, you know, the arguing, it's just driving me up a wall. And so the reason that it could be happening is anosognosia, like I said, right? So if you're telling somebody that they have dementia, and their brain is telling them they don't, they're fine, which is what happens with anosognosia, then of course, you know, there's going to be a problem there, right? There's going to be some friction. So when that's happening, essentially what your person is saying to you is, I don't believe you, right? And which can rub us the wrong way, but we need to take that at face value. They're saying, I don't believe you. There's a reason that they don't. And so we might be better off just backing off from that situation. The other thing could just be really simple. The fact that other humans like to be autonomous. So it could just be the message just could be, I don't want to do what you want me to do, or I don't want to do what you want me to do right now. Or, I don't feel like you're listening to me. And that's often at the root of it, right? Is driving really only about driving? Driving is about independence. Driving is about getting where you need to go. So that's what I mean. You know, there can be various things going on, and just really listening for the feeling behind whatever that conveyed message is, as well as the concrete meaning is really important.
Christy, some of these actions, so-called behaviors, may just occur one time in that moment, but some of them may be recurring and happening on a daily basis. Have you found that people, care partners, keeping a log of the situation, trying to be that detective, and, you know, looking at it each day and what the environment was like and what was happening? Have you seen that actually have a positive outcome?
It definitely can. And of course, I go into that more in the program and explaining, you know, when that works best and when it doesn't. So as one example of when it works well is like with the shirt thing, right? Okay, so your person is kicking you every morning at 8 a.m. Okay, well, what's happening at 7:59 a.m.? Let's take a step back and figure out what's happening there. Oh, okay, this is... I'm trying to help him with his pants. Okay, so now we got to figure out, like, does he not understand what's going on? Is there pain? Are we forgetting about the knee replacement that also has some arthritis? You know, like, what's going on there? But an example of when that wouldn't necessarily be helpful is, let's say that the so-called behavior is cursing. Right. And this, I know, rattles a lot of families. They're like, oh my God, I didn't even know my mom knew those words. And I always, you know, kind of have to laugh because it because I'm just funny that way. So there is sometimes something very, really funny about seeing a sweet little 98-year-old lady drop an F-bomb.
Well, yeah, well, didn't you share that your mom, who was always the kindest, gentlest woman you've known, didn't she have drop a couple of bombs recently or something?
Yep. And
so you talk from experience.
Yeah. My grandma, her mom, famously ripped my grandfather a new one at a doctor's appointment because the doctor told her she needed to gain weight and she should eat a lot of pasta. And she looked at my grandfather and said, "It's your fault, you son of a bitch. You'd never take me to Italy." It's like, what? Where did that come from?
Right.
No, absolutely not true. I mean, they hadn't gone to Italy, but she had never expressed any interest at all in going to Italy. So, but the thing is, with cursing, that is caused from disinhibition oftentimes, or kind of that self-editing feature, and that's when there's frontal lobe damage. So you might hear it a lot with people with frontotemporal dementia, but also Alzheimer's. And it's also, cursing is stored in this little part of our brain that is one of the last parts to be affected. And so, people could be doing it because of the damage that's happened in the brain. They could be doing it because they feel like we're not listening to them or really taking them seriously, right? And then another reason is, what if they're really angry? And that's what was happening with my mom, is she was really angry. And so a lot of times, if we just look at what's going on, the specific thing, and then take a step back and go, why would I do any of that? And so, I'm 48, so I'm a Xer. So a lot of Xers, why would we curse? Well, because we're having a conversation. Not all Xers are like that, but, we grew up on Eddie Murphy stand-up. And so, an F-bomb isn't necessarily going to make us cringe, right? But typically for the age group of people that we're talking about, which would be boomers and the silent generation, not necessarily. They don't necessarily use F-bombs as adjectives and verbs and so just having an idea of why we might do something and then kind of looking at our person too can help us figure out would this be a good time to kind of keep a log and figure out what's going on and what's behind it? Or could this just be something that has to do more with damage in the brain?
Okay. Let's pick another thing that happens a lot. If I want to pick what so-called, I'm going to do air quotes again because it's another another one of those negative terms, wandering. And so I really try not to use that term because, again, it brings a negative connotation and it implies that the person is walking around aimlessly and has no purpose, when in fact we know that it's just a normal thing to want to leave the house. We know it's a normal thing to want to get up and stretch our legs. We know it's a normal thing to want to walk into other rooms. So to label it as that is going to prevent us from finding out what the unmet need is. So Christy, can you help us kind of maybe walk through a scenario in that instance?
Sure. So I think we're talking about maybe two things, which one is traditionally called exit seeking.
Okay.
And the other one is traditionally called wandering. So when we're talking about wandering, so-called wandering, it could be because somebody is lost. It could be because they don't know where to go. And it could be because they're not sure where they're supposed to be. And it could be because they're looking for something or someone. And but I agree, using the word wandering is not helpful because I think there's typically a purpose to it. And in all of those examples that I just said, people are trying to solve a riddle, right, that's happening in their head. Now, with so-called exit seeking and exit seeking, with opening a door, that's really what it is, right? When people open a door, why do they do that? So the idea that's happening in their head could be that they need to get somewhere, So often people will say that they need to pick up their kids from school or they need to get to work. And unfortunately, our natural knee-jerk response to that is, pick up your kids? What are you talking about, Mom? Even the grandkids aren't in elementary school anymore. Well, in that moment, that's what's real and present for your mom, is that she needs to get to the school to pick up her kids. And likewise with going to work. Oh, you've been retired for 20 years. Well, not in that moment. People don't randomly say stuff just to make conversation, right? If they tell you they need to get to the school to pick up the kids, that's because they feel they need to get to the school to pick up the kids. They're not looking to get into an argument with us when they say something like that.
Right. So there is a real need there. There's that unmet, yeah. There's that unmet need. And as you educated us in our couple episodes back on using our superpower, we can go into that moment with them and help them through it and keep them safe and happy.
Right, exactly. And then another reason, and you and I have talked about this a lot, Mike, because we both like being outdoors, is a lot of times people need a change of scenery.
Exactly.
They want to be outside. You know, what's on the other side of that window? What's on the other side of that door? My husband and I love being on our patio, and it's kind of like our little happy bubble. And you know, that's our thing. We love that. And for a lot of people, it's just, you know, I think it was a couple of years ago, or my mind is giving me that comfort now, but we had Snowmageddon here. And it doesn't usually snow here, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we all know the weather's changed, but we had snow like 3 out of 4 weeks in December. And it had snowed in November. And then that 1 week where it didn't snow, it was so cold that it melted a little bit. But then the temperatures dropped again overnight. So it was iced over. And then it started snowing again in January. My point being, everybody was trapped at home unless they had like massive SUVs. And they were telling people stay off the roads unless you need to drive. And everybody listening on the East Coast is laughing hysterically. And I don't blame you. But, you know, we're just not built for that on the West Coast, right?
And the cabin fever gets us quicker, probably.
Yes, yes. Oh, my God. I was like, I don't care if I break a hip. I got to get out of here.
Exactly.
And actually, breaking a hip is one of my biggest fears in life. But I had like, yep, it's still 12 outside. That feels bad. But just to like open the door and look out there, you know, and I am able to reason and logic my way through it, right? Like, this is why I'm stuck at home. But that is normal for everybody. And, you know, related to that is people can get bored. Like, there's nothing particularly interesting happening for me here. So what's going on out there? And finally, sometimes people, and this would be if it's a sudden change. So we always want to distinguish a sudden change from a normal state, right? But with a sudden increase in confusion, sudden disorientation, then we could be looking at delirium or an infection, in which case we need to get our person to medical attention. So kind of knowing the normal pattern is always very important too.
To help us figure out why our loved one is doing something, it helps us to know that normal pattern. It helps us to know who they are and what their life history is. And like my wife is going to know, I go out the front and back door probably 20 times during the day because I'm always walking around because I work from home for one thing. And I need to get that fresh air, but she's going to know that about me if I'm,
right.
If I'm opening a door. And what other, as we wrap up today, can you just kind of summarize it, Christy, and maybe give a final tip or two for our care partners out there?
Well, I would say, you know, definitely remembering that the person has dementia, which means their brain is under attack. And so they're going to think about things differently and express themselves differently than they used to. So keeping that in mind, knowing that anosognosia is also a thing. So they're going to do things that we don't think they should do or that aren't safe for them to do because their brain is telling them that everything's okay, there aren't any impairments, and that they do what they do because, just like us, their brain's telling them, you know, It's a good idea. Do that thing. When we use our insider knowledge, when you step in, step up and into that role of dementia care partner and recognize and give yourself credit for being the expert that you are on your person, then you're going to have a lot of success in figuring it out. That said, I have loved doing the pod so much. It's so exciting. And right before we started recording, Mike, you told me that we've hit a significant milestone. So to celebrate that, I would like to, for our listeners, I would like to give them this bonus piece from the Memory Care at Home program and provide a link for that. And it is, it's like a 46-page PDF. And so it's, don't worry, it's not like, oh my God, homework. It has one thing per page. But if somebody's, so for example, if somebody is exposing themselves, like this is the message they're sending, they're exposing themselves, what does that mean? And so then it has three possibilities of why they're doing that. Or if they are, let's say, hitting or hoarding or kicking, any of those types of things. So 36 of the most common so-called behaviors in this guide, The Language of Behaviors, to help our listeners figure out what's going on.
Well, that's incredibly awesome, Christy. And that milestone is we had 20,000 downloads over the course of the Alzheimer's podcast. And
woo-hoo,
20,000. And by the time you're hearing this, we'll probably have 4,000 or 5,000 more, or who knows, because there is a delay in publication. So thank you to our listeners and our care partners out there for making the Alzheimer's podcast the success it is. And I look forward, Christy, to sharing this guide with them. I'm sure it's a huge resource and an incredibly valuable resource. And I'm also sure that we could probably easily do an episode for each individual thing in there. So we could probably do 36 individual podcasts and still not cover it all. So, you know, for our care partners, you know, thank you for understanding that this is, you know, pretty general in the conversation and that we can't go into detail on every, you know, scenario during every broadcast. So, Christy, thanks again. I look forward to having you back next week.
I look forward to being back. Thank you for having me. And thank you so much to our listeners for making the Alzheimer's podcast a success. You guys are the best.
Awesome. All right. Bye now.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode 64. And you can subscribe to the podcast there so you don't miss upcoming episodes, including next week's when Christy and I will discuss how to get your person to go to the doctor. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.